first, I want to thank the House of Culture for having a meeting on markets. I think that it's a little bit unusual for people on the left to talk about markets. What they talk about usually is capitalism or agency. And I don't want either of those to be the subject. I want the subject to be the markets. And I'm also glad that Karen went first, because she has explained to you quite a bit about algorithms, which is good, because that'll save me a little time. But also, what she did was she had that slide about the way that the traders talk about the market, as though the market were God or something like that. I think it's very important to understand that much of what she was describing is, in fact, characteristic of neoliberalism. And of course, I don't have the time to explain neoliberalism to you. But the first, the first commandment of neoliberalism is that markets know more than any human being, always. And so, therefore, the market is the greatest information processor known to mankind. And the story that I'm going to want to tell you explicitly exists to argue against that. Think of it this way. You can only beat a theory with a theory. All right? You can't beat a theory just by criticizing it. So what I'm going to do tonight, actually, is in a very short period of time, trying to see back there, is to tell you a story of a different kind of theory of markets, okay? By the way, you can think of this will make it go down easier. Think of this as science fiction first. You know, lie back and just think of this story. Don't get too upset. Think of it as something like The Matrix. And then you'll see by the end, I hope, that I'm serious, that I mean this, that this is what markets are, okay? All right, I start off with a slide here of a somewhat famous heterodox economist who makes a number of, I think, rather damning admissions, one of which is that the whole question in orthodox economics of who set the prices has been lost. That's an amazing admission, is it not? Another thing he says is that one cannot talk of equilibrium prices independently of market organization. Therefore, demand is not defined in any simple and general way. You will also see that my story totally contradicts what you learn in undergraduate economics, which is that story, that a market is fully characterized by its demands, okay? Now, this comes from someplace, and so I'm just hinting that if you want to learn more about this, a recent book with Eddie Nitkaa called The Knowledge We Have Lost in Information. And for those in the audience who don't really care about economists, another argument we make in there is that economics itself is becoming more anti-humanist. And I'm willing to talk about that more maybe later. That it's not about what a human being is anymore. And the more you know about it, the more you realize that that's really unimportant. Let's take the neoliberal story. The neoliberal story is the market is the superior information processor. Well, if that's true, you know, what do you and your little preferences mean? Not very much, because it's the market that always knows more than you know, okay? So, what I'm going to argue is that it's time for a gestalt switch, okay? We're sort of just sitting down. We haven't taken the red pill yet. That even economists, famous economists, have admitted that the literature of economics contained little discussion of the central institution that defined economics, the market. I know that sounds a little weird, right? Economists, don't they talk about the market? Well, see, but if you know something about its history, no, actually, they haven't talked about the market very much. And so that's what I'm going to suggest tonight, that we flip the analytical focus, and that a science of markets should be a science of the diversity of markets, not the diversity of people. That economics has almost nothing intelligible to say about the diversity of people. It is not a humanist project. Now, this is just the historian in me that I can't help but let come out just for a minute, and then I'll lock him back in his box. This vision of the economy actually goes back quite a long way, but it happens in individual writers who now don't even get covered in the history of economics. There are people like William Thomas Thornton, John R. Commons, even John von Neumann. Yes, that von Neumann. Okay? They have thought about some of these things before, so that's where some of these ideas come from. All right, enough throat clearing. Now we are in the matrix. What is a market? A market, and by the way, I'm using terminology Marcomata just so that I can indicate that I'm talking about a new way about markets, not the way people have in the past, is an abstract economic machine that evolves in an environment of irreducibly diverse human beings. Now see, this is the opposite of the way one thinks of evolutionary economics. If you know anything about that literature, evolutionary economics is about how people change their minds or something through time, all right? I'm saying, no. It's the reverse. It's the markets that evolve, and it's the people that are irreducibly diverse. So this means all kinds of strange things. See, now we really are in the matrix. What is evolution, or what is replication? Replication is not physical, it's computational. That's how markets reproduce. There's no single generic index of success, so that means different markets do different things. I'll come to a list of possible occupations in a minute. Who selects the markets, or how are markets selected? Well, see, that's the role of the environment. That's the role of the human beings. They're the ones that do the selection. And they are also the ones responsible for mutation. What is mutation in this world? It is, as Karen has already pointed out to you, people, participants, trying to fudge the rules. See? And if you fudge the rules enough, you have created a mutation. Okay? Now, another thing about this. I know a lot of people on the left really just don't like mathematics and economics at all. And I can understand why they feel that way. But a theory that is going to beat neoliberalism has to take the position that they've just been using the wrong maths all along. And for those of you who know something about my work, it's mathematics stolen from 19th century energy physics. And it still is. It's calculus. It's constrained optimization. But the trouble is that math doesn't even fit your everyday experience. Tell me, have you ever paid the square root of 2 for anything? Have you ever paid I for something? But those are all legitimate prices in standard orthodox economics. See? They're using the wrong math. You guys are laughing, but it's true. They are using the math of simple mechanics. These are different kinds of machines I'm talking about here. All right. Now, just so that you don't feel like I'm being too vague, I want to suggest, markets don't do one thing. Markets do many things in many different combinations. This is why there is no generic market. There can't be. All right. And by the way, notice how that's an attack on neoliberalism. Neoliberalism wants to imagine this big blob, godlike market that knows everything. And I'm suggesting, no, different markets do different things. Here are some of the things that they do. Forgive me, I'm just getting the teeniest bit technical here. One of the most important things about markets is that they do accomplish data dissemination or exclusion from data. That's important. They also route orders through time and space. You've heard a little bit about that from Karen. They execute orders. They engage in price discovery or assignment. They validate or negate custody and delivery arrangements. See, this all sounds kind of boring, right? No, but each of these things are absolutely necessary, okay? They dictate clearing and settlement, including property rights assignments. They either support or not record keeping, and they help define the commodity itself. This is a very important insight. Commodities don't come with natural definitions. It's the market algorithm that defines what the commodity is, what passes as being a legitimate commodity, all right? Now, here's what I want to suggest to you. The reason that markets are diverse is because different market formats accomplish these tasks in different ways or not at all. So no market does it all, and some markets can be thought of as being actually comprised of subroutines. Okay, not only are they machines, but they're kind of semi-modular. See, this will allow them to evolve. Right? And so that's part of what happens when we talk about markets. By the way, a very important part that if there are any economists in the audience, there was no attention paid to these diverse aspects and functions of markets by standard economists until about the 1990s. And even then, it was only done in a haphazard way. Isn't that interesting? That it took them that long to figure out what the hell a market was? See, there's a historical story here too, which I don't have time to do. Why treat different markets as computational entities? What this does is this suggests a totally different way of thinking about the economy. What is an economy? It's an ecology of various populations of market forms, changing their size, sometimes mutating, and moving through time. All right. So this is inherently in evolutionary economics, not a fake evolutionary economics like game theory, but the real thing. You can't talk about markets without talking about evolution in this view. It allows the application of formal complexity measures. I am only talking to a few people in the audience with that. I know that. It also allows network theory to be applied, that the different markets can be conceptualized as being networked. They take as inputs the outputs of other markets and then export those outputs to yet third markets. Okay. It also allows us to discuss failure, and I'm glad Karen brought that up too. See, what is market failure in standard economics? Well, you didn't make a Pareto optimum. Yawn. Who gives a shit? All right? This is real failure. Markets can fail. They cannot produce the outputs they are supposed to produce. See, so it's a totally different way of thinking about crises as well. Okay. Look, there is a formal side to this. I don't want you to get all worked up. I just want you to see that if you wanted to know more, it is possible to know more about this. I am really serious about this. Different Chomsky definitions of complexity can be mapped mathematically into different definitions of types of markets. So, for example, the dumbest kind of market, which is a posted price, which, by the way, is what you see every day. I'll come back to that. The dumbest kind of market is just a finite automaton. It's really just the dumbest kind of machine possible. A slightly smarter one, which has a little bit more memory, would be something like a sealed bid auction. A linear bounded automaton would look like a double auction and so forth. You see, I'm quite serious. We can mathematically map different kinds of markets into different machine descriptions. Okay. All right. I can also talk about why there are different kinds of markets exist. They actually work better or worse with different types of people, as you would expect, different populations, okay? The type of market that is most robust to you, because remember, you're the environment, is a posted price market. It's least inclined to screw up, least inclined to create problems with other markets, and thus is the most common market in human experience. See, that's an evolutionary law. Did you think humans were the most common biomass? Just because, you know, we think we're the top of the pyramid? Think again. Think again. It's bacteria. The simplest organisms are the most common. The simplest markets are the most common. So, we can begin to make law-like statements with this strange new economics. Here's a few implications, and obviously, you know, I could do a lot more, but this is just to give you a taste. All markets operate on rational numbers. That is a corollary of a theorem in this stuff. Nothing ever trades for anything other than a rational number. Isn't that your experience? The most complex versions of market model are not most prevalent in human experience. They tend to be found in rare, specialized parts of the ecology. In other words, finance. Market failure looks like an inability to halt. That's a technical term, which cannot be ruled out in advance. There is no such thing as a completely foolproof computer, which never halts. There is no such thing as a completely foolproof market. Do you see the politics of this compared to neoliberalism? I'm doing this consciously, okay? I am. That no one can say that this ecology of markets knows more than any human being. And therefore, there's no such thing as a laissez-faire solution. See? This is what the left needs. A logical argument, not a gut feeling. I've been told I have to hurry up, so let me conclude. This could be an economics of the future. The kind of research that would be done in this economics is sometimes technical, but sometimes would be empirical. So for example, an explicit natural history of the evolution of markets would be central to this way of thinking, you see? In the same way that one had to have the fossil record and the evolutionary record in order to discuss evolution. One would need to know what was the history of the evolution of markets, something that I guarantee you no economist cares about. No currently educated economist cares about at all. There would also be empirical studies on the actual distribution of these different forms, correlated with their impacts upon realized price distributions. You realize that different market formats selling the same good would give different price quantity profiles. In other words, there's no such thing as a law of supply and demand. Isn't it about time we admitted that? That is just the silliest story that we have been bequeathed from the 19th century. There is no such thing. Finally, one could talk about the exploration of phase transitions. Phase transitions are what economic crises look like, where you go from one sort of relatively stable ecology, it gets triggered, whole bunch of markets die off, and you're in a new world. Maybe that's a better way of thinking about economic crises. Maybe. That's it.